Chapter 28. Alistair Ashcroft smiled down at the young man, whose face was scarlet with rage and the effort of struggling against his bonds. He shook his head.
"Look, Paul, I understand why you're so angry with me, but you have to see things my way."
The look he received was murderous. However, Ashcroft was a patient man, so he dragged another chair across the room and sat facing Paul Lorimer.
"The first thing you should know is that you have been lied to by the police. They have told you a whole pack of untruths about me, and because we were friends once, I want you to know the real truth."
He leaned forward, all sincerity.
"The most important thing for you to know is that Ezra and I were close. I loved him like a brother, and I did not kill him."
Paul was still struggling, but more feebly now.
"Sit still, boy, and listen. If you stay calm and quiet, I'll remove the gag, and if you listen and let me tell you what really happened, I'll untie you and let you go. Deal?
What do you have to lose just by listening?
Nothing, right?
Think about it, Paul. I didn't have to stay here, did I? I could have gone anywhere, back to where I came from, but I didn't."
He laughed softly. "I left those letters for you to see. They say you're not very bright, but I disagree.
You've proved me right by finding me when half the police force couldn't do so. That's why I knew I could trust you to help me."
He looked at Paul and raised his eyebrows. "So, can I remove the gag?"
He waited. Paul nodded. Ashcroft moved around to the back of the chair and loosened the gag, which slipped down around the boy's neck.
"Better?"
Paul coughed, then muttered something. The main thing was that he didn't scream. Ashcroft returned to his chair.
"You must have realized you were my favorite. Your brothers are great, but I always thought you were special. I'm sorry I lied to get you to help me, like with the gun, for instance, but I didn't dare tell the truth. Imagine if I'd told poor Jacob. Would have been a disaster. You are the only one I can really trust."
"Who are you?"
croaked Paul.
"My name is Ralph Renwick, and Ezra was very dear to me. But,"
he looked sadly at Paul,
"he got himself involved in some very dodgy deals back in Hull. I tried to warn him, but by then he was in too deep. He upset some seriously nasty people, and he feared for his life. Sadly, he was right to do so."
"So they killed him, not you?"
"They did, Paul."
Paul looked unconvinced.
"But why did you come here? Why pretend to be Ezra?"
"Well, to keep it short, Ezra told me all about your family and how much he cared about you all. He also said you weren't managing very well and that he was worried for your safety. The man he was frightened of lived in Saltonlefen and knew where you lived. I wanted to protect you, but also find the man who killed Ezra. That's why I needed the gun that you and Levi stole from me."
He allowed Paul to digest this information.
"And I'm very sorry I had to hit you earlier, but you would never have listened if I just tried to talk to you, isn't that right?"
Paul shook his head.
"I wanted to kill you."
I know, son. But now you have the truth, and I'm glad. I know you struggle with your temper, Paul, but you are far brighter than the others. I know you will understand that what I'm telling you makes sense. For Ezra's sake, I need to find that man before he gets to your ma and the rest of the family."
"Why did you have to kill all those other people? I don't understand."
"You think I killed them?"
Ashcroft looked suitably horrified.
"Ezra's killer must have been watching. He stole that gun from me, Paul. After all your efforts, I never even had the chance to use it."
"So you were innocent
of everything, apart from deceiving you boys. And I only did that to help you in the long run. Oh, Paul, I do so wish I had been the real Ezra. I felt so at home with you all. I mean, I treated you well, didn't I? Bought you food and drink? Be fair. Would I have done that if I didn't care for you?
I guess not.
That was all he wanted to hear. The bait had been taken.
Then I'll untie you. We'll have a drink together, and I'll answer all your questions, okay?
Nodding, Paul gave a wan smile. Alistair Ashcroft smiled back at him.
Then I need a favour from you, if you're willing.
If you do this for me, you will earn yourself and your ma more money than you've ever seen. He took out a wallet and opened it.
This is just a little down payment.
He peeled off 6 50-pound notes and pushed them into Paul's pocket.
You'll get the rest later.
And it's money for nothing, trust me. He had watched the boy's eyes glint as he took out the money and knew it had clinched the deal. He untied Paul and gently massaged his wrists and ankles.
Okay, my friend, you are now my second in command. We have a reconnaissance operation to carry out.
But, he gave Paul a knowing wink,
they say an army marches on its stomach, so we'll eat first.
Then we need to do something about your appearance if we are to move around unnoticed.
But the town is full of police and
half of them are looking for you, and the rest are looking for me.
Ashcroft gave a contemptuous laugh.
Fear not, young soldier. For one thing, we are not going into town, and with a couple of simple additions to your clothes, you will be able to walk right past them, believe me.
His laughter faded.
I want to thank you, Paul, for helping me.
As far as I'm concerned, catching the man who killed your uncle, my dearest friend, is the most important thing in the whole world, and the only way I can do it is to convince that Detective Jackman of my innocence. You understand, don't you? Paul looked at him gravely.
Yes, Ralph. I understand now. Just tell me what I have to do.
Marie and Gary finally got home, after what Gary called a night to remember. Marie was just endeavouring to shut the car door quietly when her mobile rang. What now? It was late, and a call at this hour did not bode well. She prayed it was not bad news about Sam Page. Cursing softly, she took her phone from her pocket and stared at the display. Unknown number. Tentatively, she answered.
Marie Evans? I need your help.
Rachel? What's wrong?
It's Paul, Marie. He's gone looking for the man who impersonated my Ezra. He said he was going to kill him.
Marie knew what it must have taken for Rachel Lorimer to pick up that phone.
Listen, Rachel, I'm really pleased that you rang me, but don't worry yourself too much. We have half the Fenland Constabulary out looking for that man, and if we can't find him, how will Paul?
Unless he knows something that we don't.
I know that, but just, if he did find him, there's something you really need to know.
Rachel Lorimer paused. Marie waited.
He has a gun.
Marie closed her eyes. Had Salton-le-Fen suddenly turned into bloody Dodge City? Did everyone tote a gun nowadays?
Do you mean his air rifle?
She recalled that all bar one of the Lorimers used them to keep the rats down.
No, Jacob saw it. He said it was a pistol.
Where on earth?
I don't know. I'm just scared for him, and I don't want you lot shooting him either.
Rachel sounded almost hysterical, which was unlike her.
Calm down, Rachel. We won't shoot him.
Unless he does something really stupid.
But, and this is important, does Paul know where this man might be?
I don't think so. I mean, why would he?
Maybe he gave him an indication when he was acting as Ezra?
I doubt it. And you know my kids, Marie. You don't drop hints to them. Not one of them will catch on.
She paused for a moment, then added,
I sent my Levi and Gillian to Salton to look for him and bring him home.
What to say? Marie certainly didn't want to give Rachel the unvarnished truth, that the streets were alive with police officers, some heavily armed, all hyped up and looking for Ashcroft. The tension out there was palpable. Nerves were stretched to their limit. It was not a good place to wander around at night, especially carrying a gun.
Look,
I know you have to do whatever you have to do, Marie, but he's not a bad boy. He's just angry and hurt. If you can, please help him.
Of course I will. I'll do everything in my power. Now, does either Levi or Gillian have a mobile phone? Can you contact them and ask them to come home? They would be safer with you.
We can't afford them mobile things. We don't have nice fat police salaries like you, Marie Evans.
Sorry, Rachel, I didn't think.
Rachel Lorimer didn't deign to respond. I just want my kids back safe.
I'm going to ring the duty sergeant right now, Rachel, and ask him to tell his guys to look out for Levi and Gillian.
Good. And Paul?
The same goes for him. Let's just hope he doesn't wave that gun around. I'll tell Uniform that he's not a threat, but to be careful not to frighten him. It's the best I can do.
That's all I can ask.
There was a rustling of paper.
Now, here's Levi and Paul's car numbers. Levi has an old Vauxhall and Paul drives a Renault.
Marie wrote down the license numbers, make and colour of the cars. It wasn't a big town, and with so many people keeping off the streets, Uniform should find them without too much trouble. It was Paul's reaction, if approached, that worried Marie.
I've got your number. I'll ring you if I have any news. And, Rachel, you call me if any or all of them come home, no matter what the time, okay?
Marie ended the call and hurried inside the house. Gary was boiling the kettle for a cup of tea.
I don't even want to ask what that was about.
Marie raised her eyes to the ceiling.
Oh, nothing much. Paul Lorimer has turned into Roy Rogers and has gone after Ashcroft with a pistol. Levi's organised a posse to fetch him back, and his ma wants us to find them all and send them home. That family.
She shook her head.
But I'll have to ring the station and report it. I can see the headlines now. Police gun down poor deprived kid with learning difficulties. The public will love it.
Are you going to tell Jackman?
Asked Gary, taking milk from the fridge.
I have to, and I'll get the latest on Sam at the same time.
Her expression darkened.
That gunshot is still ringing in my ears. How about you?
I'm trying not to think about it. It was such a good evening up until then. I was totally relaxed. Then, bang!
He shuddered.
I can say it now, Marie. I was scared. Really scared.
You weren't alone, Gary. I was shitting myself. Ashcroft promised to take me out one day, and I thought that day had come.
Gary handed her a mug of tea.
Make your calls before we frighten the life out of each other.
Marie smiled at him.
Thanks for being here, Gary. I think I might have fallen apart if I were on my own. At least we can buoy each other up, can't we?
He grinned at her.
That's what mates are for, and it works both ways. I may be a man, but that doesn't mean I don't need a bit of support.
He pointed to the phone.
Ring it in before Wyatt Earp Jr. starts cleaning up the town.
Sam Page was being assessed prior to surgery, and Jackman and Laura had been asked to wait outside. Jackman had got them coffee, which tasted even worse than the stuff the station provided. Despite his attempts to persuade her to go home, Laura had insisted on staying.
It's all my fault, Rowan. I should never have got him involved. I knew how dangerous Ashcroft was, and yet I still asked Sam to come and stay with me after the apartment was broken into.
Jackman had never seen her so distressed.
Sam was aware of the danger, he said gently. And he came to you, didn't he? You didn't force him. I reckon he'd have been pretty hurt if you hadn't turned to him, don't you think?
Laura didn't reply.
If anyone's to blame, it's me, Jackman said. I let my guard down tonight, and no one should know better than me that you never do that with Ashcroft on the loose. Just because we were out of Salton, I allowed myself to believe that we were safe for a few hours. I just wanted everyone to take a breather and enjoy themselves, remind them that there's a life away from mayhem and murder.
Laura took his hand.
There's really only one person to blame, isn't there? It's not your fault, and nor is it mine.
The main thing is that Sam is still alive.
That still puzzled him. Why was Sam not dead? Unlike Christopher, Barney, William, and Ernie.
Thank the Lord, whispered Laura. He's been like a father to me over the years. always there to talk me through the tough cases or just to discuss interesting ones. I'm not sure what I would have done if he had been killed.
Jackman wondered that too. When they had talked about families in the past, Laura had always steered the conversation away from herself. It had soon become clear that it was a subject to avoid. What happened to your real father? Don't tell me if you'd rather not.
He died, she said simply. Far too young.
Not wanting to push her, Jackman assumed it must have been cancer or something like that.
That's rough on a kid, he said softly.
He went to work one day. He was a consultant psychologist too, you know. And he never came home.
It's all right, darling. You don't need to say any more.
I was always going to tell you one day, Laura said softly. It's no secret. It just hurts, so I try not to think about it. You see, a patient he was treating pushed him out of a window, and he fell to his death. He was 38.
Jackman closed his eyes.
I am so sorry.
That's why I became a psychologist too, to continue his work, caring for the damaged people that need help so badly. A few years later, Mum married again and moved abroad. I never really took to my stepfather, so I was pretty much on my own after it happened.
Jackman didn't know what to say. He'd often wondered how people coped with such situations, when someone close to you is suddenly erased. And of course it had happened to his brother James. When his beautiful wife went out one day and didn't return, James had fallen apart. Laura squeezed his hand.
It's all right, honestly, I should have told you ages ago.
Before he could respond, a nurse beckoned to them.
You can go back in for a while, but we will be prepping him for theatre shortly.
Sam was conscious but heavily sedated. Even so, he smiled when he saw Laura.
Sleepy, he murmured. Very sleepy.
How's the pain, Sam? Asked Jackman.
Pain?
Ah, they've given you some of the strong stuff, then.
Feel wonderful,
burbled Sam, and closed his eyes. The nurse checked the monitors.
I suggest you go and get some rest now. He's booked for theatre quite soon, and afterwards he'll be taken to intensive care. The bullet damaged the brachial artery, and we have a vascular surgeon coming in to operate on him. It's a complicated procedure, and we'll need to monitor his heart very carefully, as he's had cardiac problems in the past.
I'd rather stay, said Laura.
I'm afraid you won't be able to see him, probably, until tomorrow lunchtime at the earliest. You can leave your number and we'll ring you should there be any cause for concern.
Jackman put his arm around her.
You need some sleep, Laura. And so do I. He's in safe hands.
Laura hesitated, then nodded.
You're right. But I'll drop you off at the station early in the morning and come straight back here.
He was happy with that. He was also happy that a number of uniformed officers were in attendance at the hospital. Sam would not be left alone anywhere the public had access. He didn't think Ashcroft would be back, but they were taking no chances. As they drove home, Laura suddenly said,
Ashcroft never intended to kill him, did he? It was a message for you.
She laid her hand on his leg.
Sam's wound is in the identical spot where he shot you.
He nodded.
Except I was lucky. It was a smaller caliber bullet, and it missed the artery.
So he had been right to wonder. Ashcroft never missed his mark, and he hadn't this time either. As Laura said, he was just reminding Jackman what he was capable of.